Hey, BA fam, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. Are you a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Hey, jazz hands and scene. I missed y'all. I feel like it's been forever.
It's been years, days, what?
24 days without a word. Is it 24 days? 24 hours? I don't know. Whatever Tony was saying, I feel like it's that times 2000. I'm just glad to be here in 2018, you know, making it great.
8,000 year, the year then we're all going to do better.
Yeah, 2018 is going to come over here, sit down next to me, don't touch nothing, and behave yourself.
Although I think, right? I just said 2008, so I'm already not doing better.
I know. Oh my gosh. So how was your New Year's? Did you do anything special?
We just kept it chill. Well, actually, you know how, I don't know if you have this issue, but when you have relatives in different, like we have two different families now, and basically we missed Thanksgiving and Christmas with my mother-in-law. So she was like, do not even think that you're not going to be here on New Year's Eve. I am like reserving. She's like, I'm in advance. I'm going to reserve you guys for New Year's Eve. You're going to be here on my couch eating my food, and it's done. So that's where we were.
Aww.
New Year's Eve. Yeah.
Oh, so that was cute.
Just with the mama.
I was supposed to spend, cause we spent Christmas with ourselves, and then I hung up my family a little bit, but for New Year's, we were spending it with Superman's sister, but I got really sick. The flu like nearly took me out. So instead I spent it at home trying not to die. So I didn't die. I'm here. So that worked. So other than that, it was pretty uneventful. Well, let's start on a high note. Let's talk about Mama Oprah and these Golden Globes. And then we can take out the trash later.
All right, fine.
So Lady O delivered the most amazing, inspiring speech. 9 full minutes where they did not even turn on the music because they knew better for Lady O. And it was just what we needed to hear. And so I just want to take a moment to say thank you, Oprah. You are the queen bee, the queen O.
I don't even need her to run for president. I know that there's all this speculation about will she or won't she, but I don't know if Oprah being president, I mean, obviously, I think she'd be an amazing president, but I feel like right now we just need something to soothe our souls. And I feel like the entire Golden Globes, like Oprah's speech was definitely like the highlight. Like I basically just stopped watching after that. But the whole Globes with the Me Too movement and all the celebrities wearing black in solidarity to show that they, you know, for the Time's Up movement, it just feels like we're finally like the fear around the whole Me Too movement was that, you know, is this like a flash in the pan? Is it really going to last? And is it going to like touch people's lives who aren't celebrities and who don't have huge platforms and, you know, lots and lots of money? And so to have the Time's Up movement that they started, they announced it on New Year's Day in this like massive, splashy, like New York Times one page ad. And it's 300 actresses, producers, like high-powered women in Hollywood who are getting together. But they're not just, you know, initially I was like, ugh, like whatever. They're just, you know, it's rich celebrity women, you know, trying to create another sort of, you know, awareness movement around sexual harassment, which is fine. But what changed my mind about it was the fact that they are actually creating this legal defense fund.
Oh, yes.
Yes, which is meant to – they've already raised $13 million, but then they've opened up a GoFundMe account where you can contribute. And the funds in this legal defense fund are meant to reach women who are not in the same privileged position as them, as the founders of this movement, who may not be able to like who aren't willing to speak up about what's happening to them at work because they're afraid of losing their jobs or they don't have the resources to take people to court.
I just love when people put their money where their mouth is. I mean, not literally, because that's nasty, but like, you know, figuratively, because it's like you can talk about it, but do you be about it? And so to see women, like, you know, in power and positions of power and wealth, quite honestly, to say, you know what, everyone is not in our position to come forward and be able to still support themselves. So we're going to do more than just like talk about it, you know, we're going to do something. And to see all the women were Black, except for the unfortunate few that clearly didn't get the memo, they don't have friends. I was like, ma'am, why are you wearing a red dress? A red dress. No one told you. I felt bad. It was one lady in particular.
She wasn't
You
on
could
the group
tell.
text.
Yeah, you could tell she was like, wait. I was like, ma'am, are you not in the secret Facebook group where they said everybody wear Black? Don't play yourself. And it wasn't even like she wore a dark green. It was cherry red with cutouts. She was
Oh,
like,
Lord.
I know. But no, it was just really great to see that, you know, even like the not so subtle shade of celebs on stage, like Natalie Portman, when she said, and the all male nominees for director are Ron Howard next to her looked like, yay, looked like Mike Myers when Kanye said George Bush doesn't care about Black people. He was like, that's not on the
Awkward.
teleprompter. Exactly. That needs to be a meme. Awkward. And it was just so dope to also see Tawana Burke, right? The woman that started the Me Too movement.
Yep.
Yeah, I love the fact that, like, you know, Michelle Williams brought her on the red carpet, because I don't want, with all of this incredible momentum that she, her name, her legacy, and what she started is lost, you know, and taken over. So I'm just glad to see that that's happened.
I think it made up for the fact that Time magazine left her off the cover of Person of the Year when they named the Me Too movement People of the Year. And they didn't put the founder on the cover, but she's doing just fine. She looked
Yeah, because a
amazing.
friend of mine is like friends with her, and she was the one who dropped the ball on a New Year in New York on New Year's, and
Right,
they
yeah.
were they were out there lit with their fur and their Timbs. I said, if you don't represent for the East Coast, that was awesome. Okay, now time to take out the trash. Let's talk about how somebody's president, not our president, is a tweetaholic. It's so crazy to see two grown men like him and Kim Jong. I'm not gonna get
Kim Jong-un.
Yes,
North
I'm not gonna.
Korea? You mean North Korea's? Okay, yeah.
Yes, I didn't want to get his name wrong, and I don't want to be disrespectful of his name. Because I have an African name, and people were like, "What?" I'm like, "Girl, it's not
I
hard."
mean, he is threatening to like blow us up all the time, so I wouldn't like be too upset at you if you didn't get his name right. Just saying. Lil Kim. Lil Rocket Man.
Oh my God, yo, that is perfect. He who shall not be named, and Lil Kim, were going back and forth on Twitter. I'm like, what is happening? Is this real life? It just, anyway. But, you know, a little gleam in my eye happened when Steve Bannon, Donald Trump's right hand, you know, decided to slap him with it. And I thought, this is great. I cannot wait. Well, now that Fire and Fury, so for those of you who don't know, there's a book that's come out. I guess it was written during the election, not during, well, during like the actual campaign time before the election happened. Is that when that book was written?
I don't know when it was written, but it covers the Trump campaign and his early days in the administration.
And so Steve Bannon, who we've all come to hate, like just had some critical things to say about the president during that time, and they showed up in the book. Like he called him unpatriotic and said that that his meeting with Russia was treasonous, basically true tea. But of course, the president was livid because he's five. Steve Bannon has now been demoted and demoted again and demoted again. So much so now that he's not even at his beloved media company, racist right-wing media company. What is it called? Bearheart? Is that what it's
Bright,
called?
Breitbart. Close,
Breitbart.
close.
Same thing.
Bearheart.
Same disrespectful thing. So yeah, I was just like, wow, it was so much going on. I'm like, wow, look at you, Steve Bannon. He looks diseased on the outside, and I'm like, clearly, you are slowly dying on the inside, and I'm here for it.
The significance of the fall of Steve Bannon, I think, is so if you guys wonder why does this matter, you have to consider that Steve Bannon has these huge, hugely rich supporters who have been giving him money and being like, now you go find the next Trump and you get the next Trump elected in small town USA all over the country, taking open seats in Congress. And that is what Steve Bannon has been doing, trying to back anti-Republican establishment candidates. And so the fact that he's seen such huge, massive donors to his cause back out in the wake of his remarks in this book, and now he's stepped down for Breitbart News, it's taking away that power. And I think a lot of people are excited about that.
Okay. I think, yeah. And I just, because it's hopefully it's the, you know, just another little piece to dismantle this diseased regime. And that's all we're going to say about that.
You know, I mean, at least we have a stable genius in the White House.
Oh, my goodness. And so, no, you know what I thought was a little bit giggly? So, and I'm sure she's not stupid, but it was funny that when Oprah did her speech the next day, Ivanka Trump tweeted her. It was like, oh, my God, it was so inspiring. It was amazing. And I saw all these people tweeting her like, girl, like, should I tell her or should we just leave it to her, like, leave her? Because she's talking about your father, boo-boo. Like, and I think you mentioned before, like, that, yes, that you know, you believe that obviously she knows, but she's kind of like, it's like a little subtle dig. But I'm like, girl, your blood relation. I can't.
I just feel like if there was, you know, have you seen Get Out?
Yes, I have.
If there were such thing as a sunken place for women, like there in that movie, there was a sunken place where African Americans would go. I feel like she's in the sunken place of womanhood. Like she's just, I mean, how could you be in this administration supporting it as a woman? I just feel like, her and Sarah Huckabee, they're in the sunken place for women. That's how I feel.
Yeah. Well, you know, hopefully they arise out of that sunken place. And if not, they will sink with the ship and we will wave at them from the top. any other buzz things that you want to talk about?
I do want to mention real quick, speaking of the Globes, just real quick, because I don't think we mentioned earlier that there were some firsts, a lot of firsts. I mean, apart from Viola Davis being amazing with her natural hair, a couple of like first time winners. So Sterling K. Brown became the first African-American man to win in his category. Best actor in a drama. Oprah, of course, was not just making history with her speech, but just her mere presence winning that award. She was the first African-American woman to win that award. It was called the Cecil B. Merritt Award. I forget. Cecil something award. By the Golden Globes. And who was the third one? Oh, Aziz Ansari. Yeah, he was the first Asian actor to win. But I think he was best actor in a comedy for Master of None.
Yes. When I saw that, I was like, oh, because I honestly love him. He seems like the guy from high school that was like in your, like, you know, English class that had you rolling in the back. And you were like, Aziz, I'm going to get an F. Stop making me laugh. Oh, yes. And honestly, it was a magical night. People's speeches were just great. And yeah, I'm just proud of all the brown ambition that we saw on stage.
Absolutely. There could have been a little bit more. It did sort of feel like, if you watch the whole show all the way through, it did feel a little bit like, I only wish that more women of color had won awards, because I feel like the people who won were getting a lot of time to speak. And you really didn't hear but one woman of color or one black woman's voice that I can recall. Now, I remember I stopped watching like later in the show, but I don't think that there were significant women of color who won besides Oprah. So until Oprah spoke, I didn't see any other, you know, women of color making speeches. It was a lot of white women who were winning, you know, awards in their category, which was great. But I think just because there weren't as many winners of color, you didn't like hear those voices as much, which was kind of sad. But you know,
we got to take what we can take and push take back.
But I am excited for the new year. I know right before we broke for the holiday, we had talked about resolutions and like paying down debt and stuff. And I wanted to reveal so every some numbers around debt around the holidays. So every year, Magnify Money, we put out this survey and we ask people the week after Christmas, you know, did you take on debt over the holidays? And if you did, how much debt? And for the past 3 years, we've been doing this survey, and guess which direction the number is going?
Up.
Up, 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 up. Yes. So actually,
I don't get it.
Well, I think that people, I think honestly, so the economy's doing really well. The markets have been amazing, like having record market returns. And not just that, but unemployment is at an all-time low. So I think people are feeling more confident. I mean, just there's all these indices that show that consumers are more confident, and I feel like people just feel like things are great. Why worry about this little credit card? Like, I can handle this. So this year, on average, people who took on holiday debt racked up over $1,050 on credit debt alone, which doesn't sound like a ton of money, but if you think about it, like if you're the kind of person who maybe has opened up like a store credit card around the holidays and you put $1,000 on that card, if you just make the minimum payment on that card and you have like a 20%+ interest rate, you could easily be paying that card off for the next 5, 6 years, like easily, and hundreds of dollars in interest charges. So it's significant. And I don't know about you, but I feel like I think that this is a manageable amount of debt for anyone to have, for the average person to have. But what scares me is like things are great now, but what if you let this debt linger and you just sort of like take your time paying it down, and then when things aren't so great, then all of a sudden you've got this debt that you didn't pay off when things were a little bit flusher, in the bank, and now you're like stuck with it, and then you're missing payments, and I think that's like how the spiral starts. It's like it's taking care of debt when you can, when you have the means, so that when you when something happens and you don't have the means, like you're not getting stuck down the rabbit hole, which I think a lot of smart people do.
No, and honestly, it's one of the reasons why Superman and I wanted to get our house, quite honestly, in cash, because it was like, okay, if I don't know where life is going to lead, and I'm nervous by nature. Nervous by nature, not because I hate you. I just had to bring that up. But I just, it's, although I know business is great, I just seen too many ups and downs in my life. So I want to stabilize parts of my financial life to say, okay, so worst case scenario, that there, we will always have enough. If our house is paid for, we will make enough to cover our expenses. Like, even if I don't have a business anymore or whatever, or there's a shift in trends or whatever, and so no, I totally get it that you're right, that when people are confident, they feel like, oh, I've got this debt, because I definitely have been there where I'm like, oh, I got this debt, and then I lost my job, and then I lost my home, and I wish I didn't have this credit card debt holding me down. A friend of mine actually reached out to me, and she was struggling with her credit card debt. One of her interest rates was like 25 or something percent, something crazy. And so I actually directed her to the National Foundation of Credit Counseling, because she was like, I don't have a whole lot of money, and all these financial or credit advisors, or they charge a lot, and not all of, I used to think all of them were crooks, but I actually know some personally, and they're not all. But I like the NFCC. It's NFCC.org, because they're nonprofit based. So she actually went through it, and they based her payment, like what she pays them to help her, they base it upon what she makes. So it's like super low. I think she pays like $20 a month or whatever, while they're like helping her organize her finances and get her credit together and stuff. So that's really low, because most of the credit folks I know charge $100+, $100 or more.
So you're talking about, just real quick, this is so the NFCC credit counseling, right? So I love the NFCC too, and I think there's like I just want to make that distinction between what they're doing. They're a nonprofit, and what like for-profit credit counseling or debt relief companies promise. 'Cause like so the NFCC, they you need to be in a fairly significant amount of debt to qualify for their services, like but and also have an income so that you can actually make your payments. So that's like the two requirements. But they so you pay them a fee every month, and then they will work on your behalf as much as they can to negotiate to negotiate your debt, come up with solutions to pay down your debt, whether it's consolidation or organizing your debt and prioritizing it, whatnot, helping you with that whole strategy. So like there's other debt relief firms like you were talking about that also charge fees. To do something similar, but who one may do things that are shady, like ask for fees up front before they even do the service, or they may say that they can help you negotiate your debts, but then actually, like the lenders won't even work with them. So there's definitely things to watch out for, but I think the reason like everyone, the reason that like people like you and me, we always mention the National Foundation for Credit Counseling is because they're a nonprofit, and they are not in it to make money off you.
Exactly. And then two, that they have locations in like every state, basically. So you would go to NF. CC.org, and you would type in your zip code and they would show you the nearest place nearest you. I don't even think she actually went in. I think like she just like worked through it on the phone, and she's actually really happy with it. She had a lot of questions. She was really nervous. She ended up consolidating her debt. She's like, wow, like I'm gonna be able to pay it off sooner. My monthly payments are now lower. And she was like, is it normal that they're charging me a fee? I'm like, well, how much is the fee? And she was like, $20 a month. I'm like, yes, girl, like that is more than fair. So I was just really happy that she was happy and was moving toward, that she'll be done in a few years. And there's no, I was like, there's some things I told her to check on, make sure there's no prepayment penalty. I know that there wasn't with the NFCC, but I wanted her to start asking those questions as part of procedure. Are there any prepayment penalties? What other fees do you have? Like, so I had her have kind of like this checklist. And so she ended up feeling really empowered. And so yeah, it's just a great organization. If you're in trouble and you really need some handholding, but you can't afford, these other companies.
Hey, BA fam, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. Are you a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Do you want a boost or do you want a break? I'm excited because I actually have a really good boost today. So I was like, we're not skipping over boost or break.
I wasn't gonna, but okay, you go first, son.
I'm so excited. Essence is back, black owned. Isn't that so crazy that that's something that we have to say, that Essence is.
I didn't know that they weren't. I was surprised. It was that's exciting, though.
I know they were owned by Time Inc. And so they were actually bought by, I think his name is Richard, Mr. Richelieu. I'm saying his name completely wrong, I'm sure. So he actually was the man that founded and created Shea Moisture. And so he actually sold Shea Moisture to Unilever. And I'm sure all that cash, he said, what am I going to do with this cash? So he ended up purchasing Essence. And what's super exciting is that their executive board is all black women, which I'm like, yes. So it's just, like, I know a lot of people that work at Essence, and everyone over there is like super duper duper excited. And so because Essence is not just a magazine, Essence is a communications company. So they, they have Essence Fest and they have conferences and experiential like platforms and e-commerce. And so I'm just really excited to see the direction that Essence takes. Now that the magazine that speaks to black women is run basically by black women, which makes sense.
That's amazing. And it doesn't happen that often.
It doesn't. So that's a huge boost. 2018, you doing all right. Keep it up. Keep it up. Keep it cute. And so that was just a little great, like, I just saw everybody was super excited. I saw people who did never bought Essence were like, I subscribed. I can't wait. Because the truth of the matter is, like, all my young friends, my Mandy millennial friends were like, Essence? Girl, nobody reads that magazine anymore. But when I was a youngin', Essence was like the go-to. So it would be nice to kind of see it pop again,
That's great.
Oh, and a little side boost. I got your holiday card today.
Oh, you did? Happy New Year. It's a little bit late. Blame the blizzard.
Yeah, it was so cute. Superman is so cute. He opened it. He was like, oh, this is so nice. Look at Mandy. She what did he say? She looks hilarious, or she looks like fun or something like that. I bet you that's why Enrique fell in love with her. I just looked at him. Sometimes like Superman will just say the most like sweetest thing, and I'm just looking at him like, was really nice to say. He was like, I don't know where it just came out of nowhere. He was just looking at the card, like he was like, "We're putting it on the refrigerator right here, so it's on our fridge."
I made the fridge. What?
Yes, you made the fridge.
Meanwhile, mine's nothing but baby cards. I'm like, this year I was like, "You gotta go, sorry, little Joey. There's no more space for you." Baby Anthony's got a new portrait. Got to put that right up front.
Yeah, we did kick somebody else off the fridge, and I was like, we can't kick them off the fridge. He was like, it's time for them to go. We're putting Mandy and Enrique here in their stead. So, you know, I was like, okay, I can do that.
Here's my pro tip. I don't like to send Christmas cards, like pre-holiday cards. I send New Year's cards. Why? I order them like 2 days after the New Year whenever I can. And they always have amazing deals on like New Year's cards after the New Year. And you know, in the mail, like things get there a few days after you send them. So I think I saved like 70% on those New Year's cards because I waited until after the New Year and like looked at all my promo codes and stuff. Like Ebates had 8% cash back. Then the website had like 60% off. It was exciting.
That's smart, actually, really smart. I'm like, because I said, I'm like, I want to be one of those people that sends the really cute cards with like their family and stuff on it, and everybody looks forward to it. So,
yeah, man. My boost is going to be so I just watched the first episode of Grown-ish this weekend. So I think I'm a little bit too old for it, but I'm just like, I was so happy because I love Yara Shahidi, who I still can't believe is like 17 and a half or something crazy like that. But this is a spinoff from Black-ish. They gave her own show now.
Yes, it looked really cute. I saw a little bit of it.
It feels like a different world, like of this generation. And it was really exciting to see. It has like a really diverse cast. There's a bisexual character. There's an Asian character. I don't know. It feels really good and refreshing. And I wish I were 19 because I feel like I would love it. But shout out to Yara Shahidi and the Black-ish family for the spinoff. What network is that on?
I have no idea.
I just watch everything on Hulu now.
Yeah, right. I'm like, I don't know. Demand? I don't know. I feel like nobody watches things in real time hardly anymore.
I could do a whole boost for just women of color powered TV right now, because I feel like it's just amazing right now. Lena Waithe has a new show on Netflix called The Shy. Is it Shy? It has to be Shy, right?
Yeah, Chicago. Shy. C-H-I, like Chicago.
That Chicago, one, right? Yeah. I think it's about the gun violence in Chicago, but told through like real stories. I haven't watched it yet, but I'm really excited to watch it.
It looks really good.
And there was like a new Netflix show with two chocolate sisters who are like hijacking trains. Like, you know, I feel like what's really exciting is when you see shows about women of color where their color is not the focus of the show.
Yes, I love that. Uh-huh.
Like, okay, yeah, two teenagers like robbing trains. That's fun.
And then, you know, like Issa Rae got like I think she got a two show deal or something like that.
Yeah. So I'm excited
to see. I don't know if that's Netflix, but I know it's coming.
I feel like it's HBO or
probably.
Yeah, because I was really sad that she didn't win Best Actress, I have to say. If we can go back to the Golden Globes, I thought that she should have won. That was a bummer. But I digress. She was there with girl. Yvonne.
Yeah, I know. I love Yvonne. She is like my favorite. We like Kiki in our group chat. Like she's just hilarious, like in real life and on TV.
She's been blowing up. She had all these sold out shows opening up for Chris Rock. Yvonne, what's her last name? Orgy? Yvonne Orgy?
OG. Mm-hmm.
Opening up for Chris Rock in Manhattan. And then my friend saw her at Caroline's the other day, like a sold out show at it's a comedy club in New York.
New York. So mm-hmm.
It just feels good.
It does feel good. Feels good.
Feels like a boost. Ooh, two boosts.
We're off to a good start. I know. I feel like we haven't done two boosts in a while. Two boosts the Ravens.
I tried real hard.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited because as we move into our ask a question, get an answer, we're going to focus our Q&A today on net worth. Correct, Mandra?
Yes. So as you guys all know, Tiffany on the side, Tiffany, the budgetista, Alice, her superhero persona. So for the last how many years now? 3-4 years?
This is our fourth year. Mm-hmm.
Fourth year doing the Live Richer Challenge. And this year was all about net worth, which is my favorite word ever, net worth. Yes. So I thought today on the show, we could take a question from a listener who's asking about how to build her net worth. And I wanted to talk to you first about why is net worth the most important number you can know about yourself, just to set us up.
Well, because net worth gives a more accurate picture of where you really stand financially. So if you tell somebody, oh, I make $30,000 a year, they might be like, ooh, you broke job. But that's not the full picture because that's just what you make, but it doesn't really explain or express how much you have as far as your finances. And you might tell somebody, I make $1 million a year, and it sounds awesome. But that doesn't, like I said, express where you stand as far as your financial health. And so your net worth is a it's based upon two numbers. It's based upon your assets, that's what you own, and your liabilities, that's what you owe. So your net worth is what you own, assets minus what you owe, liabilities. So own like home, a car. Some people debate whether your car can be a net an asset. It can be. Savings,
Only for
retirement.
the appraised, like the only for the value it is right now.
Yes, exactly. Your same thing like with if you have investment accounts, retirement. So you have to think to yourself this way, that your assets are things that if you were to liquidate them and get cash for them, what would you get now? That's what your assets are worth. So, like, let's just say you own some pretty expensive jewelry. You know, you can include that in your net worth if your jewelry is substantial enough. You know, not like if you have a, you know, I mean, if you got like a $50 ring, that's cute. But I don't know, I would necessarily add that to my net worth unless I was like, you know, young and I didn't have many assets. But your liabilities are things like your loan, your mortgage, your car note. So some people were asking me, like when they're folks who are doing the challenge, the Live Richer challenge, if like their cable bill is a liability. And I'm like, no, unless you're behind. You have to think about your liability basically is debt, not bills. So something that you have to pay down and off, that's the liability. So
It's different
what?
from cash flow.
Yes, it is different from cash flow. I mean, it's net worth is a snapshot right now of how much and what you own. If you were to liquidate everything, what would that number be? You know? And then how much of what you owe, if everybody came calling today and said, give me my money, everything that you owe me right now, what would the end result be? Would it be negative? At one point, I was almost $300,000. My net worth was a negative 300,000 almost, because I owed the house that I eventually lost, which was like 200,000, my mortgage. I also owed $35,000 on a credit card because of a scam that I was a victim of, and then I also owed 50,000 on a on my student loans. So that was like what, 280? And I didn't own any. Well, I had a beat up car, so it was like maybe the car's worth 5,000. That's literally all I had left because I had taken all the money out of my retirement account. I had no savings. I had no money. Maybe like a few bucks in my pocket, but that was it. So my net worth was basically like negative 275. So pretty steep. And that's one of the reasons why I kind of really wanted to focus on net worth this year with the Live Richer Challenge, because we've done the fundamentals. That was the first year. We've done the savings edition. That was the second year. Last year, you know, we partnered with Magnify Money, and you guys saw Mandy every single week, and I'm going to get her on this challenge as well. We did the credit edition, which is really dope. And so this year, as usual, the challenge is completely free. It's my gift to y'all. You can sign up for the net worth edition at lrcnetwork.com. We actually don't have like any big sponsor or anything this year. So just like kind of like me out of pocket, just like sharing, because I love to see y'all move forward. So I can't wait to, you know, take this net worth question so y'all can learn how to make your net worth pop in 2018.
And I love it. What I love about net worth too, and I'll put a link to the Live Richer Challenge net worth, LRC net worth, TH. Dot com.
Yes.
Not network. Someone had asked, network, what?
I know. It's my list. It's my list. I'm sorry.
No, what I love about it is that it's not, it almost, I feel like sometimes people are pleasantly surprised by their net worth because it's really easy to think about everything that is due and everything that it maybe like your student loan debt or, you know, your mortgage or whatnot. But when you're talking about your mortgage, you also have to look at the equity in your home that you know, the value of your home and take that into account. The equity in your home is an asset. The mortgage is a debt. But when you put them together, you have a much smaller number than the debt that you owe. Or anyway, you hopefully have a much smaller number. So I just think, yeah, it's a more holistic way and more like realistic way of looking at what you owe and also what you have working for you.
Yes.
So love it, love it, love it. So in honor of the net worth challenge from the literature challenge this year, I wanted to take this question. And you guys, nothing has changed in the new year. You can still send your questions to us at brownambitionpodcast.com.
Well, at gmail.com. I'm like, wait a minute.
Well, no, I'm
Well,
come on
that's
now.
true. I'm sorry. Brad, I was like, wait, what's happening?
Let me
No,
do
you're
that
right.
again. I'm questioning. Make sure to put in your email though if you want us to use your name or not. If you don't, I just assume you want me to put all your business out there. So, but thank you so much for your questions. And we do, and these are real questions we're answering. So definitely check back on the next episode to see if we answered your question. So, Ashley, I thought this question was really good and fitting for the net worth conversation. So, Ashley has this question. She says, I'm grateful for your knowledge and pleasant discussion of topics that can sometimes be difficult to discuss. I'm a 27-year-old married teacher of 5 years. I have a tendency to look for more work, like tutoring, essay grading, academic support, rather than trying to better manage the funds I am currently earning. What recommendations do you have for a go-getter to get on track, for better financial management? I see that working hard and getting side hustles is great, but I also feel like I'm losing time with my family and also have to consider that as part of the price. So it's like she's taking on a bunch of work, trying to increase her, this is one way to increase your net worth. But she's wondering, like, could she get further by working on the underlying issues that she may have, like the reasons why she feels like she needs to take on this side hustle work in order to have to do less of it so she can spend more time with her family.
Definitely. Honestly, it's the to me, it's the age-old question of how do you balance? Because net worth is those two things. It's you can make more, that way you can have more, or you can spend less, that way you can get rid of your debt. And to me, there's no right or wrong. It really depends on what your personal goals are. So if you have not, but I will say this, that if you have not maximized your current budget, meaning not meaning that like, you're counting every little penny and you're not going anywhere or anything else, but you're not You don't have an actual working budget. You're not kind of looking at the ins and outs of how the money is coming in. Definitely do that because you might find you don't have to work as much as you think. You know, that's the key, is that I don't believe in what I call over sacrifice. Well, I don't just call it that. It's like a word, right? I don't believe in over sacrifice, meaning like you shouldn't do more than you have to do to achieve your dream. So if your goal is to save, let's just say $10,000 in 2018, you could say, well, I can work extra hours to make 10,000. Or you know what? If we, ate out lunch, only 3 times a week instead of 5 times a week, we could save 5 of the 10 and I only have to work half as much. So you have to kind of do that like a juggling act and but start with your basic budget. So that way you don't have to over sacrifice. You don't have to work as much if that's not what you so desire.
Yeah, and I think too, I feel like looking at decisions and asking yourself, how is this going to impact my net worth? Like once you get that number, let's say it's like, I don't know, negative 5,000. Like you're making a good income, but you have $10,000 in debt and you got 5,000 in the bank saved up. So your negative $5,000 net worth, like I think once you have that number and every major decision you're about to make, asking yourself, like, how is this going to impact my net worth? Is it going to get bigger or is it going to get smaller? I think that that can really help people. I mean, I think that's the difference between going out and upgrading to the hottest car or that new iPhone because you feel like everyone has it, versus finding a car that you can drive for 10 years because it's going to make your net worth positive.
Exactly. And it starts to change your decisions. I mean, when I first met Superman, he wanted a new car so bad. And it took like a Herculean effort not to convince him not to get a car, not to get a car just yet. And so, because he had a car, he just wanted a new car. And then it wasn't until we really started the home buying process and he saw that we had enough to get a house cash and what that meant. And now there's a potential investment property that we're going to purchase. And now all of a sudden he's shifting like what he sees that money can do. Like I can get this car or I can get this property that's actually going to put $100,000 in our pocket. Huh. let's do that instead. And so, you know, it's much easier to stick to a plan when you have a specific goal in mind and the goal is tangible, because it shifts your definition of sacrifice. Because no one really likes sacrifice, but I don't feel like what we do is sacrifice, because in the end, there's so much more to be gotten. So asking yourself, you know, kind of like, what is that end goal? Because then it becomes joyful making decisions that put you toward that end goal. And you start to realize that the things that you wanted to collect before, you know, are actually not not as fun, because they take you away from your goal of financial freedom.
Yeah. And let's talk about some like actionable ways to improve your network. So there's the obvious ones, like Ashley is in trying to increase her income. That's obviously mm-hmm. one way to improve your net worth. Paying down your liabilities, like debts, is one way to increase your net worth. And budgeting, you know, cutting expenses so that your day-to-day living expenses are decreased. That's another good way. What about like strategic ways to increase your net worth? Like, for example, one way to increase your net worth, obviously, is to cut expenses so you can save more. But think about saving in a vehicle that could like really work for you, like saving mm-hmm. in a way where your money can actually grow, you know, exactly. baby steps, obviously, like getting an online savings account where you might get a better return for your money, or a CD where CD rates are rising, or something even bigger, like what Tiffany is saying, like seeing about investing some savings, investing your finances into an investment property that exactly. could potentially give you returns, opening up or contributing to your 401k, which can give you return on your money over time, or like opening up a brokerage account on the side when exactly. you feel like you are in a place where you can do that, because then your money is working for you. And it's like adding that extra little bit of something to your strategy. So you don't feel like you're just like, some people can feel like you're digging a hole and it's just like filling back up with sand. Is that the expression? Is that a thing?
I'm like, I haven't heard that. I mean, I'm picking up what you're putting down, but
okay,
I'm like,
thanks.
That's not the normal expression.
It's like when you get a big plate of food at a restaurant and you're like, damn, I feel like I've been eating for days and it's not going anywhere. Yeah. Like that. Just me? No. Okay. Anyway, it helps you move the needle a little bit faster to think of like, how can I maximize my savings?
Yeah.
And you know, what about maximizing the, like, if you have income from your side hustle, how, you know, maybe instead of just putting it in a regular savings account, if, you know, if you've got most of your debts paid off and you can invest it, like, why not make the money work a little bit? You know, investing into a brokerage account, or an IRA or something, or an IRA or something like that on the side, mm-hmm. or putting it toward a bigger investment goal, like a investment property down the line.
Exactly. There's actually, I'm going to give you a link, Manny, to put on our blog, because I've been really trying to investigate different robo advising companies, you know, like Acorns and I think Ally has one, and of course there's LearnVest that you've used before, and there's one called LVest. That I went to New York to meet with them to really learn more about what they do. And one thing that they have, and I'll give you the link for it, is that they actually do, and I just got mine the other day and I thought it was great. They do a free investment plan, which can cost anywhere from $1,000 plus. And because I had actually paid an investment advisor not too long ago to create an investment plan. So what I liked about the LVest investment plan was that you went on, you said your age, and there was like 5 different future financial goals to choose from. Like, I want to get a house, or I want to grow wealth, or I want to retire, or whatever. You choose your goals, and then you put your goals in order of importance. And then you put down how much money do you want to have when. And then so LVest creates like this like personalized plan that kind of says, okay, Mandy, at the age you are now, if you save for 20 years and put it in an IRA account, or you put it in this kind of account, and the average rate of return on that account is this is what you're going to have. This is how close you can get to your goal. I just thought it was really great to kind of see like these numbers compute, but in a way that was, because I've done a lot of those kind of like, almost all of them have something similar like that, but I'm not going to lie. Sometimes I'm looking at it, I'm like, I don't know what this means. You know, like, what is it? What do these numbers mean? But it was really clearly defined, and it's completely free. You know, of course, there's always an upsell, which you don't have to, because I have a financial advisor. So you can take your investment plan and sit with your financial advisor if you have one, or take your investment plan if you decide you want to invest on your own, but at least you have some sort of blueprint. So it's, like I said, it's free, and I don't know how long it'll be free, but well, I think I'm pretty sure it'll be free for a long time.
Well,
if not forever.
Specifically, what's free is the investment plan, right? Because they do charge fees for their.
So that's what I mean. That just get yourself the investment plan. You don't. It's you're no under no obligation, obviously, to sign up for LVS, but get it, because I, like I said, I have a financial advisor already, so I'm not. I mean, I'm sure LVS is great, but I already paid my financial advisor, so he's gonna earn his keep. But I printed out my plan, so the next time I meet with Frank, I'm like, let's talk about this. You know. Mm-hmm. So it's a great, like, kind of like opener tool to say, hey, these are my goals. Now I can see them in like this financial way that I understand. Let me, you know, it's just a great jumping off point, no matter what you decide to do with it.
And LVS, it's actually been around for a few years, but it's just now like really catching on. They've been doing a lot of marketing, but it's targeted toward women. L, get it? LVS.
Yeah.
It's targeted toward women, founded by Sally Krawcheck. Who's a longtime executive in the banking industry. So, and I would put it in the category of a Betterment, Wealthfront, Elevest, because they have these sort of pre-packaged sort of investment portfolios, and you do get sort of like a semi-tailored investment portfolio, but they're not like actively moving, like they're not actively managing it. Like you would get it like, you know, really an expensive investment firm.
Yes.
But because of that, they can charge lower fees than what you may get from like traditional investment firms. But it's in that category of like Betterment, Wealthfront.
Yep.
I'm blanking on some others.
Acorns, right? Is Acorn one?
Well, Acorns is a little bit different because that's collecting savings that, like, isn't Acorns where they're tracking your spending and you can set aside the change that they find in your bank account and invest it?
Isn't that Acorns? You're right. Works? Yeah, it's more so. You're right. Acorns is more like a roundup, and so maybe like a Wise Banyan. That's another one that's kind of like does that kind of like advising, robo advising, where they advise you, but not it's not as in depth as if you sat in front of somebody, but not as hands off as you did it by yourself.
Yeah, Acorns is a good for beginners. Like if you don't have a lot of money, you don't have like, you know, enough money to qualify for minimum balances for like a brokerage account. So you want to start with Acorns, just get your toes wet. That's cool. Like an Elevest, a Betterment, that's if you have a little bit of money outside of your 401k and you want sort of like a semi hands-off approach to investing. And that's where like a robo advisor can be helpful. I've looked into like, Personal Capital is another one. Personal Capital is pretty good. It's like a mint coupled with an investment advisory firm, like a digital investment advisory. So, I think you have to have a certain amount of assets, but I love it because I love their interface so much. And it's where I get my net worth at. I love Personal Capital's like whole interface.
Okay.
And if you want to like go the next step up, you can get one-on-one coaching from their advisors. I don't actually know what their fees are, but it's something to look into too. Personal Capital.
Okay. I've heard about them too. I've heard good things about them.
I'm a fan.
I feel like somebody hit me on social media. Was like, Tiffany, I like Personal Capital. Have you heard of them? These kind of like new, these companies are newish. Like it's a movement that's been growing, but it's newish. So it's really to answer the question for folks who want to invest, but don't traditionally want to kind of sit in front of a person that they're like, what? Financial advisor, but also are like, I don't know what to do. So it's just like, it's a great way to do it yourself, but not all the way by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like going to college. So you're like, I'm an adult, but you live in the dorm and there's like a dorm mom and you're like, okay, you're independent with help, you know?
I think it's really exciting to look. It's also like I think it's really smart that you're doing net worth 4 years in, because it's almost like, okay, we worked on the budget, we worked on credit debt. You should have a bit of a net worth now. So now how do you maximize it? And that's where these tools, and that's where looking at an investment strategy, this is the exciting part where you're like, okay, I'm in a pretty solid place.
Yes.
And I'm ready to make my money work for me.
Yep, and that's why we've done it like this. Like I've been really, because what I also try to make sure that we do is we really try to listen to the dream catcher. So that's the community that allows me to help them move forward financially. And so we always are doing surveys, and also too we have our Facebook group. So I'm always like kind of taking a temperature in the group of like what are people talking about. In the beginning, the first Live Richer Challenge was all about the fundamentals because people were literally like, I'm just trying to save $5 a month. So I was like, okay, how do we get you to the fundamentals of basic budgeting, basic money mindset? And then it was like, everybody wanted to save more. And I'm like, okay. And then it was like, okay, girl, I have some savings. My credit is crazy. Then it's like, okay. So I'm really wanting to push us forward. And so I don't know what next year's is going to be. Like I said, I take a temperature, I ask questions, I look at the survey, and then but it'll build upon net worth. It might be the investment challenge. It might be the small business edition of, so, but just whatever the next level kind of looks like. And then I think that'll be it, quite honestly. And this is my first time saying it publicly, but I think after that, that we'll just loop the challenges back around again, that it'll round out at five solid free challenges. And then, we'll go back and start with the fundamentals again for those who want to do that again, and just like reloop every 5 years with the challenges. And honestly, I'm really proud of them because so many people have been able to help themselves. Like I always say, I don't want to be your financial guru. I think like, first of all, I know like five things. And I'm like, girl, I don't know. But what I do know is how to teach. And so if I can figure it out after messing up, or I can phone a friend, I know how to put it in a way that you can now help yourself. I want to be your financial girlfriend, where I'm like, I'm not here to tell you like everything, and you're supposed to come back to the well and keep dipping into the well. No, I'm here to create a resource that can teach you, that has been well researched. Not just from my own knowledge, that I've partnered with really dope people to make sure that the information is correct and accurate, and that teaches you in a way that honors where you currently are, and teaches you in a way that you're able to reteach the people in your network. Because a guru has to talk to everyone, a girlfriend just talks to you, and then you're the girlfriend to your girlfriends. And so that's what I want. I want to teach you, and for you to take that information and to share with other people. And that's how movements really move forward. Because one day I'm going to have twins and I'm going to be too busy for all of this.
Wait, what?
I don't know. That's what Superman said. He's like, we having twins, right? I'm like, please stop wishing twins upon my uterus. So he's like, and my mom today said it. She was like, I was just thinking about you. I think you guys should go for twins. I'm like, why is everybody telling us? Because he's a
Go
twin.
for.
Well, because my surgery is going to be in like 2 weeks. So we have to talk about how we're going to be our taping. But so my fibroid surgery, and then 3 months after that, we can try to have a baby. But I think honestly that instead of like waiting for just the natural route, I think I'm actually going to go for in vitro because I'm 38. So I just kind of feel like, girl, maybe if I was 30, I'd be like, well, let's try for a year naturally. But I feel like, at 38, I'm kind of like, let's stack the odds in our favor. Plus, he's got that good insurance so that they paid for everything. They would pay for everything. And,
They
with
pay
in
for in
vitro,
vitro? Wow.
yeah, one of his coworkers actually had twins. She chose to have two fertilized eggs implanted. And he was like, ooh, you know what that means? I'm like, I don't actually know what that means. but I'm becoming more and more open to the thought of twins because although I know it would be a lot, especially for the first time out, that I don't know that I just don't know at 38 if I'm gonna be able to do it twice. You know what I mean? Like there's like if I get pregnant this one time, this might be it. You know what I mean? So, and I kind of don't want to just have one kid. I mean, more and more that I think about. I mean, we have bonus daughter, which I love, and she's 11. So I mean, I grew up with sisters close to my age, and I know what it is to have someone close to your age to play with and hang out with, and that's your BFF. And I kind of want that for my kid. And so I'm thinking about twins, girl. We shall see. Budget needs the babies. Hoocha. I'm gonna make those. By the time those kids are five, they will have paid for their college tuition with. I'm like, I need a. We're gonna be doing a blog post, guys. Are you guys ready? Are the babies ready? Let's go.
I'm just excited for all the amazing financial conversations we can have about in vitro,
Yes.
fertilization, and oof, exciting. Yes,
Yeah.
please
It's nervous.
continue experiencing these things.
It's nerve-wracking because everybody who's had in vitro wants to tell me how much it hurts. I'm like, girl, I don't want to hear all that. Just like
Well,
having, you know,
you gotta like pump yourself for hormones before they even inject you, like with
yes,
the, you know, the
you do.
thing.
Exactly. And so, I mean, I'm just trying to get through the fibroid. So, you
Yeah.
know, it's because it's nervous because I actually just last night on the news, they had like this like breakthrough where they have this fibroid pill now, but it's not fully vetted. So my mom was telling me about it. And I was like, well, mommy, I don't know how far off that is. Like my surgery's in 2 weeks. I don't want to push it off. And then it's like, well, do you get the surgery where they cut you open like a C-section, or you did get the laparoscopic, I think, where they kind of like laser it out. And so just there's so many choices and so many risks depending on what you choose. And then if you choose this surgery, there might be scar tissue. You can never get pregnant. If you there's just honestly
Well,
everybody. Huh?
one of my friends has just gone through this whole fibroid situation this last year. It over the summer she'd had the surgery and she is fine now.
Okay.
So don't, I mean, if that can give you any sort of peace, she's okay. She's good. She's healthy.
Because I know everybody has so many things, and I'm like, ah, but I'm like, you know what? It's scheduled. Because if I try to push it back to do more research, then I'm just not gonna do it. And I'm like, it has to happen because these fibroids, child. And it's so crazy when I talk to people about fibroids. I would say one out of every three women of color that I say that I tell that I have fibroids, they're like, oh yeah, me too. So either they've already had their kids or they haven't. They're trying to figure out what to do. That's the reason why I talk about it, because I want to normalize the fact that this is something that specifically our Brown and Bishan community experiences at a higher rate than other communities. And it's something that we should talk about, that it shouldn't be some hidden secret, you know? And what do you do? A lot of women are like, well, girl, I had my baby, so I'm good, you know? Or like, you know, a lot of women I know have used exercise and diet. So, I mean, I've definitely lost weight and I've changed my diet, but I just don't have the time to kind of wait. Like if, like I said, if I was a little bit younger, maybe I'd be like, you know what? I'm gonna rock out this year, strict diet and exercise, shrink them naturally, and then go for the baby. But at this point, I'm just like, take them out because I want to get this party started.
All right. You know what I found out? You can purchase pregnancy tests and condoms with your FSA money.
Really? That's excellent.
Yes, because I may or may not have on December 30th been trying to blow through all my FSA money because I put way too much in there. Whoopsie. And you know your flex savings account, or sorry, is it flex spending account? So you can put up to like $2,600 in there a year. And I thought I had a bunch of dental work, but I still ended up with like $600 left over. Whoops. And you either use it or you lose it. So
Really?
yeah, I found out though, you can go to like drugstore websites. So I went to drugstore.com. Well, what happened was I went to Walgreens. Oh wait, yeah, drugstore.com, which is like owned by Walgreens now, and they actually have an FSA shop in there. So everything in that little category on the site, you can pay for with your benefits card. So, you know, I may or may not have gotten a bunch of unneeded pregnancy tests. Like, did those expire?
I
I got like six.
don't even know. You're like, yeah, I'll take all of them. All of the tests, please.
Sometimes you
Thanks.
just want a little reassurance, you know? Like, and
I
those things
know.
aren't cheap. So, you know, for me, it's like, oh, am I not pregnant? Phew. But yeah, a bunch of those. I mean, but like sunblock, I got like a shit ton of the nice Band-Aids that I like. First aid kits, it's ridiculous. Sunscreen, I'm all ready to go. Yeah, I'm ready. And I will not be maxing out my FSA this year because that was stupid.
Well, when you know better, you do better. And now you
That's
know
my
better.
plan.
It's time for Wednesday, since you know our podcast goes live on Wednesday. So, are you gonna win? Well, we all are
There's
winners,
only one
but
choice.
yeah, that's true. I forgot this is not like it's been a long day, but a long good day. So what is your win for this week?
I have to do a win for, I mean, this is what win for workplace challenges. So a win for, and I hope nobody who works for me is listening to this podcast episode, but it's my first time going through performance reviews as a manager, which means actually having to have those conversations with my employees. And I just wanted to do a anticipatory win that I'll do a really good job and I won't mess it up because I'm a little
Okay.
bit nervous of it. I know that's not really a win, but I just need some encouraging
No,
words.
you're gonna win. You're gonna rock out. You're gonna do well. They're gonna be like, oh my gosh, Mandy is amazing.
And I'm also stealing some, you know, I talked a lot about like things I've learned just going through resumes for open positions, like mistakes people have made and things that I look out for. And I'll be collecting some tips on how to rock your performance review. Because I think for a lot of people, this is like the one time a year when they have an opportunity to remind their boss all the amazing things they did. And I've already had one case where someone reminded me of something that she had done earlier this year. And I was like, oh, I forgot about that. You're right. That was dope.
Yeah.
So a win in advance for this whole process and hopefully making the right sort of decisions.
Well, my win is kind of collective. So a friend of mine, her name is Angela V. McKnight. She's also an assemblywoman. So you guys may have mentioned, I remembered that I mentioned this like probably a year or so ago, that so she's fairly new. Well, I don't know, maybe like a year or so into her assemblywomanness. And she reached out to me and was like, I want to do something as it relates to education. I want to get something passed. And I said, okay. Well, in the state of New Jersey, there's a law where they have to teach some level of financial education in high school. But honestly, I taught preschool for 10 years in New Jersey, and it needs to start as low as kindergarten. Because by age three, kids start saying, can you buy me? Not can I have? And she was like, really? And I was like, but there's no law for that. I mean, like teachers might teach a little bit about money or whatever, but there needs to be something in place. And she said, okay. So we sat down together. And we started crafting a bill. And then we met with some committee for education of kids or something like that and worked on the bill even further. And so the bill slowly started to grow, and she started to get bipartisan support. And so the bill originally was going to be named the Budgetista bill, but we found out we couldn't name it that because you can't name a bill out of a business. But we calling it that anyway. Really, it's bill A3369, but who cares about that? It's the Budgetista bill. So what's super excited that she hit me yesterday and said, so there's four levels of government it had to go through. It had to go through the, what did she say? It had to go through the Assembly Committee, then the Assembly House, then the Senate Committee, and recently the Senate House. So there are 33 senators in New Jersey, and all 33, so 33-0 voted yes on this bill. So that was the final kind of like frontier as far as that part of the government is concerned. And now the last step, the bill now is currently on Governor Chris Christie's desk, and all he has to do is sign it and that bill becomes law. Yes. And that law would be that K through eight, so kindergarten through eighth grade, would have to learn some level, and I'm sure we'll figure out the logistics and stuff later, but they have to be taught financial education. So the first time, they're not introduced to it for the first time in high school, that they're learning it early on. And just to be, it feels crazy and historic and momentous to be part of like something that can be turned into a law. So now I'm like, what? Budget needs the law? Even though clearly they're not calling it that. But I'm calling it that.
Amazing.
So yeah, I just want to say, honestly, I did like, you know, a little bit of the work up front, but Angela V. McKnight, she is amazing. Because, I mean, it's one thing to sit down and say, there should be a law, and the law should be this, and that's literally my involvement. And Angela, is the one that had to go get support on both sides of the aisle and massage it and go to the Senate and go to the Assembly House. And so it's been 2 years of her tireless work to get it to where it is now, where, I mean, the work you have to do behind the scenes, if you watch House of Cards, you see what it looks like to get everybody like on board. 33-0, that everybody said, yes, we want this bill to be a law. So my win truly is for Angela and her tireless work, that even before she was an assemblywoman, she had started a nonprofit called Angela Cares, where it was to provide support for senior citizens where she lived in Jersey City. She's an amazing woman, a mother, a grandmother. And just, you ever meet those just kind-hearted souls? And she ran for office because she was doing such great work in the community, just because, that people were like, I want you to be in office. And she was like, yeah. And they like pushed her. And then I forget what her first election was that she won. And now she's assemblywoman. And I'm just hoping that she goes further and further, because she's one of the ones that really does it because she wants to see people do and be better. And she's got, and just the fact that like she's a brand new assemblywoman, and for her to have a potential law under her belt, like it speaks volumes to her character and her ability to get stuff done. And she's brown ambition. So there's my win for the Budgetista Law, aka Law A. What did I say? Girl, see, no one remembers that. A3369.
I was trying to play double dutch and I was not getting in there.
Go ahead. Okay, I'm gonna open the ropes. Go ahead. No.
I just wanted to say it's nice to hear at the local level people making a difference, because I think it can feel like oh, we have president idiot in the office, blah blah blah, what can I do? But it's people like Angela really, like, at the grassroots level, just running for your local office, you know, like that's something that, like, anybody can do just to make a little bit of an impact. And I'm a huge hypocrite because it's not like I've done that, but that's awesome. Awesome. Go ahead, Angela.
And plus, what I love is that Angela has bigger plans. Her thing is that if New Jersey can pass this and then we can successfully run it, then that's something that we can kind of like roll over to other states to say, hey, we have a model that works. Pennsylvania, New York, you know, so it, hopefully this is just the first of many states to adopt this this law, and we can make it a federal law, which would be amazing.
Dope. That was a nice way to end the show.
I know, right? And it was financial. See, look, I'm getting better.
On message. Yeah. Well, happy new year.
Yes. Happy new year to you too.
2018. If you guys want to give us a belated holiday gift, you could go to iTunes and leave us a review. That would be a spectacular. We happen to get a lot of nice little messages over the holidays, but you guys could really make a good impact if you left us reviews on iTunes, because iTunes shows people our show based on the number of reviews we get and, of course, downloads. So thank you so much for your support. Share the love, tell a friend. And hit us up at brownambitionpodcast.com. Send us questions. We're on Facebook, Brown Ambition, and on Twitter at the BA Podcast.
Yes. So this was awesome. It was a nice kind of like welcome back. Welcome back. Well, I'm going to take us out with a song so you can fade this out, Mandy, you know, like in post-production. Okay, welcome it. Back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Come on, Mandy. Welcome back. Welcome back.
Why are we saying welcome at the end? Oh, I have too many questions.
I'm like, whatever. I feel like, come on. And then on top of that, well, you know, I saw a lot of people who were mad at the parents. But one thing, one of my friends who actually is in the industry and her daughter models, and she was like, typically you sign a contract that says that that, you know, whatever pictures come out, that's what they're going to be. And two, they don't like parents to be a distraction on the set. So you don't get to see what your child is wearing. You just know it's H&M. It's not like he's going to be naked, you know, so he's going to wear a hoodie or whatever, but you don't get to actually see the pictures. And then the pictures, typically parents see them when the world sees them. And so that, cause a lot of people were saying, why did his parents allow this? And they might not have known until we kind of knew. But let's place the blame where the blame lies. I don't, despite it being, even if it was taken in Sweden, where maybe that's not considered racist, but you put the ad here in the United States where you know better. I mean, come on now. But I did hear the good news is that Diddy offered him a $1 million modeling contract for his, I didn't know he still had a clothing line, but apparently offered him a $1 million modeling contract, which is dope.
Is Sean John still a thing?
I know. That's why I was like, is it? I'm not so. Either way, I'm like, go ahead, Diddy. Go ahead.
I've just run out of things to say about things like that. Just.
Yeah.
I just like, I don't know. Someone just needs to be fired, sweep him up, put him in the trash.
Like, yeah.
Move on. Like, I don't know.
What? Somebody, it feels like I just. So you just don't have anybody of color, like, on your team?
Well, Sweden, you said.
Well, yeah, but still, I mean, like, okay, so if pictures are shot in Sweden, do they not, like, trickle down to, so if marketing stuff is not going to, if something that you created for the overall company is going to be shared in different markets, is there not, like, some sort of, like, oversight committee? Because, you know, what might go in Hispanic market might not go well over in, you know, I don't, in an African market.
Yeah.
So you know what I mean? So like I would assume with I'm sure H&M is a $1 billion, if not multi-million dollar company, that there's some sort of oversight committee, because you just knowing that all things don't fly everywhere, you know, and just looking like, huh, calling this little brown boy a monkey via his sweatshirt might not be a good idea. Like it's just, yeah.
It's like you thought that the Dove ad was bad. That was just a brown shirt.
Exactly. And yeah, this was H&M's like, my bad. Yeah.
Wow.
Sorry to bring it down, but you know, I just had to make sure we got that out because I was just like, what in the heck?
Well, I'm actually going to bring you down and possibly upset you because I'm really sorry.
No!
yeah, so we weren't recording for the first 10 minutes.
Oh, no, that's not so bad. I thought you meant
okay. Okay. No, I'm just, okay, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that I had, I guess when I put my new headphone in, it stopped recording.
Okay.
My bad. But I wrote down a list of things that we talked about. Oprah, Golden Globes, Fire and Fury. And then we went right into I picked up right when you started talking about the H&M thing.
Okay.
So we need to do the whole intro again. I'm sorry.
It's okay. You ready?
Yeah.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.